You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, November the 20th. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get this show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or whatever podcasting service you desire. If there's one that I'm not on, shoot me a note, and I'll see what I can do to get it on. Hope everybody's doing well. Pretty raw, cold winter Sunday. It's really the fall, but this is the first sign that the pretty mild fall we've had here in New York is coming to an end. Pretty nasty day out there, and here we are. Hopefully you're nice and toasty listening to this hot stove edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Joining me in just a little bit, Michael Mayer. Michael writes for Mets Minors and MetsMemorizedOnline.com, and has a lot to say about the Mets 40-man roster. We started talking about some of the maneuverings of the Mets 40-man roster this past summer when we did a kind of a mid-season report on the prospects and what have you, and you saw the Mets roster is now jam-filled at 40. Mets protected five individuals, including their top prospect. I don't think it's really arguable. Amed Rosario, probably their shortstop for the future. Tomas Nitto and a couple of right-handed pitchers among the those who were added who potentially could be plucked in the Rule 5 draft. And that's going to be even more important this year, I think, the Rule 5 draft, because there's reports that in a new collective bargaining agreement, the rosters will be expanded to 26, which is a far cry from when things used to be when it came to baseball, when you had to, at one point in the 80s, I think you had a choice between 24 or 25 players, and most of the teams elected to go with 24. Think about that. They forego a roster spot. Now, that's a different era when it came down to starters pretty much going 7-8 innings. You didn't need 6 or 7-man bullpens, but they forego to save money, and now you may be adding a roster spot, which is at least the league minimum salary. So think about it. It's about $500,000, you know, times that by 30. So that's the payroll that you're adding out there, benefits and per diem and all the other things that come with that. In exchange, there may be a limitation to what could happen in September where teams might only be allowed to bring up two extra players to 28, or maybe they'll have some kind of a taxi squad scenario. So the point being that this rule, you know, we're going to talk about the 40-man roster. We'll get into the top 10 prospects, the first list, the baseball prospectus list came out, a little bit about the AFL, the Arizona Fall League just ending. Gavin Cecchini has been playing in there. Maybe we'll get Michael to give us an update. I know he's been following that closely, or any other member of the Mets organization that potentially stood out during the Fall League, you know, since that's really where some of these guys start to really make their impression for 2017. And I know that some people have been talking about Tim Tebow, but that's just ESPN nonsense. I mean, the meat and potatoes is looking at guys like Cecchini and potentially some of these individuals that I mentioned that were added to the 40-man roster that could be plucked. So think about it. You have a 26th spot. You could just stash. You could do a lot of different things with that. You could stash a pinch runner type. You could stash a Rule 5 pick, because you've been playing with 25. Now, not to say that you're not going to be, you know, if you're at a disadvantage if other teams are using it, but you can use it where it could also be a developmental position if you have the right 26th man, and that's where the Rule 5 draft, where you have to keep these players on the roster the whole year, comes into play. So you have to really be strategic. the roster maneuvering game has become a game within a game right now. That's the amazing part about it. So it's never a dull moment. And a lot of times these shows like this, these niche podcasts that what we do here on the Talking Mets podcast are more fun during the offseason because you can play general manager and there's more news. You're not just talking about the monotony of the MLB season. But anyway, we'll get into that with Michael Mayer. He's one of the best. He's been a great contributor, a friend of the show. And I'm looking forward to hearing from him in just a little bit. Of course, the news this week, big league side, Neil Walker's back, accepted the qualifying offer. When I had Matt Aholt of the, or Aholt, I should say Aholt. I keep saying his name wrong. Aholt, Matt Aholt of the Record. He was on the fence. I felt it was looking kind of good because you didn't hear about any long-term extension with Walker. I don't know how the rest of the league would have opened up a multi-year deal for an individual coming off back surgery. I heard Sandy Alderson on WOR. He seems confident that Walker's going to come back and be the same player that he was before the surgery. So, look, the Mets are not about to allow their payroll to absorb a $17 million second baseman who, in fairness, is really not worth that when it's all said and done. I mean, Neil Walker, good player and what have you, but $17 million, he's probably more $10, $12 million player. When it's all said and done. So you're overpaying him, but you're only paying him for a year. That's really what it really comes down to. So I really have no issues with that. I think he's a good second baseman. Look, everybody likes to talk about Daniel Murphy, and certainly the Mets missed the MVP-type bat, or in the case, now that the MVP vote is in, the near-MVP-type bat that Neil Walker provided. And all that, that Daniel Murphy provided for the Washington Nationals. But the up-the-middle defense that the Mets displayed in comparison to 2015 is one of the major reasons they were able to navigate the season and make the playoffs. If you really think about it, Daniel Murphy and Wilmer Flores up the middle is so bad, the fact that the Mets made the World Series and should have won the World Series with those two guys a year ago is amazing. It tells you how good the pitching staff is, and it helps when you have a pitching staff with a lot of swings and misses and strikeouts. But that middle infield is one of the reasons why they didn't win the World Series with the Murphy era, but I've said that about a billion times. Interestingly enough about Walker, as I was talking about the $17 million and what it's worth and whether it's worth it, yada, yada, on that whole scenario. If you go to Fangraphs, and I don't know how they figured this out, but they put almost like a dollar value versus the wins above replacement that a player is. And Neil Walker, actually, almost every year of his career, except his first couple of years, has been worth $17+ million. So last year, he was worth $30 million. I don't know how they figured that out. I don't know if I'm reading it wrong. Fangraphs.com, forget it. I'm not going to even try to do that math because there are some players who have negative dollar values. They owe the team money. So maybe that isn't an overpay. Maybe the Mets looked at $17 million as a bargain, considering that based on his performance last year, he was worth nearly $30 million. So that means probably Murphy's worth $60 if you really think about it. So Neil Walker back, Rule 5, we talked about that. And then you have the Yoenis Cespedes news, which there is actually some news. You all saw the tweet last night from Matt Cerrone, who's works for SNY over at Mets Blog. Kind of a, I don't want to say cryptic, because cryptic means bad. Kind of a tweet that was thrown out there that had some meaning behind it, where it was like hashtag Cespedes, hashtag progress, which makes me think Matt's trying to throw a little bit of rumor out there without really putting himself in the fire, because that's always dangerous this day and age with the rumor mill game, which could cause so much controversy. But anyway, Rich Mancuso of New York Sports Day, who was on the ball with reporting the whole Cespedes situation, perhaps he's got some kind of hook inside the Jay-Z Rock Nation, CAA, Brody Van Wedegen camp over there, seems to believe that it's going to come down to four teams. Thinks the Mets are the leader of the pack. That Cespedes is trying to get this thing done. It could get done before Thanksgiving, the latest, the winter meetings. And unlike last year, where these two camps flirted with each other, but it was like if only everything fell into place, there would be a reunion. There's a serious connection here that these two sides want to get a deal done. And you could hear from Sandy Alderson on WOR this week that that's something that the Mets want to do. Now, I said when it started, when this whole hot stove started, one of my first podcast a couple of weeks ago was go out, make your best offer, put it on the table, get it done early. If it doesn't happen, move on. And some of the other teams that you hear, San Francisco, Toronto, are two teams that are out there. Maybe Washington getting thrown in the fray. If those teams decide to blow away a four-year offer, which it seems, it sounds like that's what the Mets are willing to do, 4 years, let's say 4 years, $100 million, maybe it comes out to be a little bit more. You could always put little bells and whistles to get the value a little bit higher. Maybe you backload it a little bit if they need a little bit more budgetary room now. This year, it all depends. I think the Mets have more flexibility as they get a little deeper into it than they do now, but they're going to need to pay these pitchers, so we know that. And if it can't be a meeting of the minds to come to an agreement by the winter meetings, you got to move on. Jose Bautista's name came up. I know Sandy Alderson mentioned maybe complimentary players. See, I don't want them to go that route. When you have like a Steve Pierce who hits left-handed pitching, it's a dangerous route to go because when you have a Cespedes, who's an impact, dynamic bat, no matter what you say, no matter how he annoys you with some of his mercurial ways, the golf, not wanting to run balls out, when his legs hurt, he doesn't want to slide, there's a lot of dopey things he does, you can't replace it with a platoon. It goes back to when they passed. You learn from history. What I'll tell you on this podcast, you always learn from history because no matter what has happened or what will happen, it's happened at some point to another team and probably the Mets. When the Mets passed on Vlad Guerrero, when it was a very reasonable contract, when Anaheim swooped in and signed him in 2003, they decided to go a different route. Well, let's bring in Kareem Garcia and Shane Spencer and try to put together this platoon. And there was all this talk about if you put their numbers together, it's Vlad Guerrero. It's not. They're platoon players, and they're not full-time players for a reason. And they get exposed in some way, shape, or form. Carlos Beltran in his prime was Carlos Beltran. You can't put two or three players together to create Carlos Beltran. This is not a derivatives game. I know you try. And look, there's something to be said by having a balanced team. You don't want to go overboard and just have, you know, stars at every position. Because sometimes that doesn't work, even though you want that. You got to have players that fit within the lineup. It's not a fantasy baseball team. But the point is here, I trust this sourced material from New York Sports today because Mancuso showed last year. Maybe we'll try to get Mancuso on the show in the next couple of weeks. Mancuso showed that he had something there because he was the one to jump on late January. Hey, this Cespedes thing is going to happen. This is where the momentum is. Whenever no one else had it, so I'm going to trust it. You know, MetsMorizedOnline.com linked it. You have the Cerrone tweet. So there's a lot of momentum here for Cespedes. I think it's going to get done. Now, I don't know anything. Could somebody in the 11th hour, as you get closer to the winter meetings, throw a haymaker and throw a 6 or 7 year deal? Possible. But I just don't see that happening in this case. Matty Holt made a great point last week. What has really changed in the resume of Yoenis Cespedes from last year? He gave you the exact same type of year. If you're not sold on him now, or you weren't really sold on him last year, there's nothing he did this year to sell you more on him. And I think the general consensus is that, you know, sure he would help San Francisco. Sure he would help Toronto, who just signed Kendry Morales to be their DH. I don't know that $11 million deal, if that impacts anything. I think it might impact more the rumors from Jim Bowden of ESPN that maybe Jay Bruce was an option for the Blue Jays. That's probably more of an impact there. So, I think the Cespedes-Mets marriage makes more sense than anything. And I go back to how they signed Piazza. It just made sense for both sides. It was a good fit for Mike. It was a good fit for the Mets. And I think this is, I mean, you hear the Yankees. I mean, you got to have a good fit. Cespedes started out in Oakland. He seemed to be playing well and comfortable there. But then he went to Boston and he didn't play well. Then he signed with Detroit. He got traded to the Mets. He had that period where there's all this uncertainty. And then last year he had uncertainty almost up until February 1. So I'm sure this is a guy that says, hey, I want to know where I'm going to be for the next 3-4 years. The mindset of the agents and the players, it used to be, especially post-banking collapse, and even before that, is let's drag the offseason out, get as many offers as possible, start to really get things going in, you know, mid-January for the top players, and then sign late January or possibly early February when teams really are under the gun to make a decision. And it just makes it hard to build a roster. And I think the Mets were fortunate because their plan really got blown up with Zobrist last year. And if they didn't sign Cespedes late January, let me tell you, that team would have been hurting. That was probably a second division club, pitching or no pitching, if they didn't sign Cespedes. So all signs point to some kind of happy news, maybe sooner rather than later. We'll see. Maybe we'll have news this week. If we do, we'll definitely have a special edition or some sort of show for the Talking Mets podcast. If not, you know, I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about as the Mets get to the winter meetings. It'll be interesting. There was another piece of news before we take a break and get to Michael Mayer, where Brett Cecil, lefty relief from Toronto, signs a big deal, four-year deal with the Cardinals, close to $8 million a year, almost $30 million, which could potentially blow up the market for relief pitching. And specifically now, you got Jerry Blevins, a lefty reliever, out on the market. Now, a couple of things about Cecil. Younger, maybe they view him as someone who could close in St. Louis. Blevins is a little bit older. Now, I know Blevins was a crossover this year. He could get lefties and righties out. That was a little bit different than what historically he's been able to do. But I will say this, and this happens, and I said this, I think, on a prior podcast a couple of weeks ago, maybe even last week. The weeks kind of fly by and blend together. Sports is a copycat league. And when the postseason comes and somebody does something well and is successful and wins, other teams try to do it. I always tell you how back in 2003 when the Marlins won with Juan Pierre and Luis Castillo at the top of the lineup, everybody says, well, you got to get speed again. Speed is back in vogue. And then the following year, the Red Sox win with on-base percentage of power, and everybody switched their mindset. No one remembered the speed and the contact that was in vogue the offseason before. So now bullpens are in vogue. Bullpens have always been in vogue. Bullpens are important. In an era of the sport where guys go six innings, you have to have a strong bullpen. So everyone's like going to probably overpay for relievers when in fact you really could develop a lot of your middle relieving with maybe pitchers who aren't starters that are successful, i.e. Jerry's familiar. He was a starter in the minor leagues. I don't think you have to go $8, $9 million a year to fill up a bullpen in the middle relief unless they are a closer or a top flight. You know, now you get to the really top flight, we'll get more than that. That's the Chapmans and the Kenley Jansons of the world. But, you know, there's some reports that maybe Chicago, with their fire sale, may be willing to dump the David Robertson. He's making about $12 million a year over the next couple of years. I don't know if the Mets will go that route. I'd love to see someone like that. Although his walk and strikeout rate really regressed this past year, I'm not sure. Maybe there was an injury. Maybe he was playing for a bad team. There's a lot of things that go into the numbers when you don't see a player play every day. But I think you're going to see an overvaluing of relief pitchers now because everyone thinks they're going to get Andrew Miller. And not everybody's Andrew Miller. I think Andrew Miller is a very special player. Failed starter, failed top prospect, comes back, turns himself into a lights-out reliever. Chapman, a guy that, you know, is not a common situation out there. So you can't just look at what the Indians and the Cubs did, specifically the Indians with Miller, more so, because Chapman, I think they started to run on fumes when they were going multiple innings there as the World Series wore on. You know, so if it comes down to Jerry Blevins gets a three-year deal worth $18 to $20 million, God bless you, Jerry, take it, move on. I don't think the Mets are going to go that route because I think they would regret something like that. The Mets are still very much about value. I think they're behaving more like a big market team, but I think that relief pitching will be the one component of this offseason that will get very overvalued, maybe overpaid for in the market, when in fact, you can probably look within your organization for a lot of quality arms, which the Mets have done with Familia, who's their closer, and has done. And at one point, it was Mejia, too, who was a failed starter, was a closer. There could be some components of that. You got Robert Gazelman. You don't even know what Zach Wheeler is going to be about. You don't know if Zach Wheeler is going to be a starter. Can he hold up starting every fifth day? Is the bullpen eventually in his best interest down the road? And here's a wild card for you guys with this whole thoracic outlet syndrome, TOS, probably mispronounced it, who knows. But Matt Harvey, part of that ailment was not being able to go deep into games. If he doesn't fix that, does he then become somebody that has to make an adjustment? Just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that that's where they should go. So anyway, the point is, don't overvalue relievers. There's a lot that there's a lot that can be built within. Of course, if a value quality reliever, And I think bringing back Fernando Salas is something the Mets should seriously do. However, the 40-man roster is jam-packed, and they're going to have to do some more maneuvering before that's out. And that's what we'll talk about with Michael Mayer of MetsMorizeOnline.com, Mets Miners as well. And he'll be up in just a minute. So anyway, you're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Of course, you can check out the show all the time at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media and check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, or whatever podcasting service you desire. If there's one that I'm not on, let me know. Send me a note. We'll be back right after this.
Walker drills one down the right field line. Deep toward the corner. This one has a chance, and it's gone. A home run.
Walker clapping his hands as he touches home plate. You probably just heard that.
Walker unloads deep to left field. Back goes Davis for a look, and that ball's gone.
And he hit that ball out of sight. Bang in the air deep. Right field. This ball soaring. This ball is gone. Neil Walker.
La pelota. Estrellita.
Flicks this one out to left field. That's deep. Back toward the corner. Low, and it's out of here.
You know, I knew he had power. I didn't know he had that kind of power to left field. That was pretty impressive.
And he drives this one deep to left field. This one's going a long way. A home run for Neil Walker.
Little cutter in, and he didn't miss it.
High drive, deep left field. Walker looking for another to the track at the wall. He's got another. Sixth for the year for the Pittsburgh import.
That's drilled deep right field down the line. That ball is out of here.
What a bullet. He hit seven homers quite famously in his last 16 games as a Met. Here's Walker with seven in his first 16. Walker swings, drives it well. Right field, got a shot. Deep and gone! He hit another one!
Neil Walker, a winning player, coming to a winning team. And he has gotten off to a tremendous start for his new ball club. Walker in the air to center field, to the warning track at the wall. It's out of here!
Did he do it again? He did! Neil Walker! Of April.
Dave Kingman, 1976, Carlos Delgado, 2006, John Buck in 2013. And whatever you're eating, whatever you do when you get up in the morning, don't change it. This is incredible.
We're back. Talking Mets podcast here, and as promised, I have with us a friend of the show, Michael Mayer. You can check him out on Twitter, at the Main Mets. Does a lot of great work at MetsMorizeOnline.com, prospects, 40-man, whatever. There's a bunch of stuff, so go check him out. Michael, happy to have you. How you doing, my friend?
Great. Happy to be back with you again.
Perfect timing. I know we had talked about getting together a couple of weeks ago doing a segment. I'm glad we waited. A lot going on. I want to start out with the 40-man roster, which is now fully at 40. I have a suspicion there'll be some other subtractions on this roster. You know, you said during the summer, I'll give you credit, we started talking about this, if I remember, back in July or August or maybe earlier. The Mets 40-man's tricky, and you saw with the additions. They added Ahmed Rosario, Marcus Molina, Wilmer Becerra, Chris Flexen, and Tomas Nito to the roster. They left off a number of players that potentially could help and may find their way to another team this year. Give me your thoughts about who they protected from the Rule 5 and, you know, maybe some of the individuals that you're concerned that maybe that were left off and that potentially could go and make an impact somewhere else.
Yeah, the reality is that the Mets have built some good minor league depth and built a good 40-man roster, so they weren't going to be able to protect everyone that they necessarily wanted to or needed to. So, I mean, you got guys like Paul Sewald, who's been nothing but great in the Mets minor league system as a reliever, and there's a really good chance that he'll get drafted and pitch in the sixth, seventh inning for someone kind of like Matt Bowman did for the Cardinals this year. He's definitely one name to keep an eye on. Another one that could get drafted is Philip Evans, an infielder who actually won the Eastern League batting title for the Binghamton Mets this year. And he's playing in Puerto Rico right now and hitting well there, too. And that's one of the last places these scouts get a chance to look at these guys to see if they're going to get picked. Just last year, the Baltimore Orioles took Joey Ricard in the Rule 5 draft, and they said in an interview afterwards that watching him in winter ball and what he did in winter ball was one of the reasons that they took him. So that's, he's another name to keep an eye on for sure.
Here's something. Let me throw you something. There are rumors that there might be a 26th man added to the roster this year. Now, that's not confirmed. Makes it easier to pick these guys and stash them, especially if you're a bad team. Sorry to interrupt, but I think that's important to throw out there.
No, it is, too. I've mentioned that a couple times on Twitter because that'll certainly add some intrigue to the Rule 5. Because, I mean, you have to imagine with teams having one more spot that they're more likely to go out and take a chance on a guy in the Rule 5. I mean, why not it for a season? I mean, you're kind of looking at like a free spot almost. So I definitely think that if that happens, it will impact the Rule 5.
I have with me Michael Mayer, MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Seawald is interesting because you would wonder if they could have maybe removed an Eric Goodell or someone along those lines. You're right, he's had some good numbers. Why do you think they went the route to leave him unprotected? Wasn't he pitching in the Arizona Fall League? And is it that who they have now is better? Because, you know, I've never been overly crazy about Goodell, and you have Logan Verrett. I know he's a starter, so that may not be. You have Sean Gilmartin. I'm not sure. I know that he pitched well a couple of years ago, but you had some options that you could have removed other individuals to protect Seawald. And you mentioned Bowman. Bowman's nothing crazy, but he's a very serviceable middle reliever, and he's cheap. And those, you know, that we saw the Brett Cecil contract. I know that's a lefty, but that might be there's some value there.
Yeah, I was less surprised than I think I should have been with Seawald, because if they really had the intention of adding him, they probably would have done it in September when they could have used him to pitch a couple innings. So I think more disappointed was how I felt with Seawald, because I call him the TJ Rivera of pitchers, because he's a little bit older, but all he's done is produce in the minor leagues. All he's done is pitch well. So one of the things that holds him back, and I know he hates hearing it, I actually did an interview with him recently and we talked about it, is his velocity. He only throws about 90-91, so that's one of the knocks on him, but it hasn't held him back. He's got a great slider. He's got one of the best sliders in the Mets minor league system, and all he's done is pitch well. I guess the thing I would say about Eric Goodell, Sean Gilmartin, Logan Verrett, it wouldn't be really a spot he's taking. He wouldn't take one of their spots. It would be more of one of the guys they protected, because you can only add so many of those guys to the 40 to protect from the Rule 5, because now they're full. So Gilmartin, Goodell, Verrett, Montero, those are the type of guys that are going to have to be removed when you sign free agents, because the Mets are going to sign, you would have to think, at least two or three guys that are going to need a spot on the 40.
Yeah, no, Yoenis Cespedes is probably one of those guys. Want to get to maybe a couple of non-tenders that we could look at, but Marcus Molina, right-handed pitcher, everyone's saying, you know, one of the top pitching prospects in the organization. I'm not as familiar with Chris Flexen. I mean, the numbers, I mean, I know Molina had Tommy John. The numbers for Flexen just don't jump, and I know in the minor league that doesn't mean a hill of beans. But why Flexen? Why add him to the roster, knowing that probably a Seawald will be more, you know, able to help them in 2017? I know it's not just about 2017, but, you know, I just was curious. I mean, are they that concerned that a guy like that, maybe because of that whole extra roster spot, potential extra roster spot, is going to get plucked?
Yeah, I really think with Seawald and guys like Kevin McGowan and Phillip Evans, Ricky Knapp being left off, and them protecting Molina, Becerra, and Flexen, they were really looking to protect the long-term potential guys, which is Flexen. I mean, the numbers aren't great, but the stuff is pretty good. He got a fastball in the mid-90s, and he's got a very good breaking ball. So I guess you could envision a team taking him and putting him in the bullpen. I mean, when you have a fastball like he does and a good curveball, I mean, it's pretty easy to pitch at a major league bullpen when you have two good pitches like that. So I guess they envisioned that, and he was one of the players that was in the original Jay Bruce trade before. It's believed that his medicals were the ones that actually nixed it, but I think they just went long-term potential when they went protecting guys this time, instead of guys like Seawald and Evans that may help sooner but don't have the ceiling that some of these younger guys do.
Do you think, you hear some rumors that Rene Rivera will be non-tendered, and a couple million bucks. I like Rene Rivera. I think he did some nice things, and I think a lot of his charm is more due to the inabilities of both Plawecki and Darnold to really stand out this year. Neto's 22. I know he just played in high A, but we saw Jesus Flores a few years ago jump. Understand with Washington, who was in a bad place at that time. Any chance, as you know, you go into the season with Darnold and Plawecki, it seems like the Mets, and a lot could change, of course, are comfortable giving Darnold another year. Does Neto worm his way in at some point? Is it possible? Is that way too premature?
I think it's pretty premature with Neto. I like him a lot, and it's not just the offensive numbers he put up this year. He really improved on defense. A lot of the pitchers I talked to from the St. Lucie staff love throwing to him, call it a good game, and he actually threw out 42% of base dealers this year. So I like him, but I think he'll start in Binghamton this year, probably play the full year there. So I think next year is really when you would start talking about him. But to get back to Rivera, I think he's definitely a non-tender candidate because the Mets now have four catchers on the 40-man roster, which, I mean, that's not unthinkable, but a lot of teams try to keep it to three. So that would get him down to three if they non-tender him. And in all reality, you can probably get him back possibly on a minor league deal. So, I mean, that may be their thinking is, I don't think it's that they don't want Rivera. It's more of it would kind of help him in the wiggle room of a 40-man spot, too, and then maybe get him back on a minor league deal.
Yep, and he makes sense that if you sign Cespedes, that he's the guy that goes. I mean, you look, though, I mean, now what do you do? Now, it could obviously be trades and whatnot, but, you know, Ty Kelly you could remove from the roster. I mean, you know, Matt Reynolds, you risk losing these guys. You know, you and I have talked about Rafael Montero. It's just dangerous just to throw guys away. It's interesting, it's just there's no flexibility. So you think about like Kelly Johnson, maybe bringing him back, and Fernando Salas or another reliever, bringing them back on free agency. It'll be interesting to see where Sandy Alderson and his team goes because there's no real easy answers here because you need depth. You have the risk of losing guys. You have the specter of an extra roster spot. The Mets, like you said, have some guys that show that they could step in and do a nice job. You know, these guys help them make the playoffs. Your gut telling you, is there anybody else that you see on this roster that you're like looking at, like, you know, maybe it's time to go because, you know, you don't want to pass up having to get a veteran like a Johnson or a Salas because you want to compete this year.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, I think one of the first guys to go would probably be Montero. And another one is Edgen. I think he's another non-tender candidate that they would like to keep but don't necessarily – he's arbitration eligible, so they don't necessarily want to give him the little bit of bump in pay, and it would give him another 40 spot. I mean, he did get lefties out in the majors last year, but the velocity wasn't back with Edgen, and he wasn't getting the same movement on a slider. So I think Edgen and Montero, the first two obvious ones. I know Verrett gets knocked around because he didn't pitch well as a starter, but his numbers in the bullpen are still pretty good for the Mets, so I think that's some depth, at least, that they would like to hang on to, kind of in the same role as Gil Martin. So I think they would be kind of like your third and fourth guys. And Reynolds kind of sticks around because he's one of the better defensive shortstops that they have as an option for depth. So he kind of sticks around for that reason. But he was pretty overmatched at the plate in the major leagues. He struck out a ton. So I think he's probably your fourth or fifth guy. And Ty Kelly, I don't know. I think Ty Kelly is going to be the new Eric Campbell and lives on for
yeah,
two or three years.
that's true. With Michael Mayer, MetsMorize.online does great work covering the minor leagues. Great analysis on the Mets at the Maine Mets. Maine as in the state of Maine or John Maine, however you want to look at it. One last thing on the roster because I want to get, I mean, BP's Baseball Prospectus put out the top 10 prospects. Want to get to a couple other things with you before we wrap up, but we know about Rosario. We know about the upside with him. I mean, it's hard to see unless he really busts his way through or something tragic happens with Reyes and Cabrera that he could find his way to the big league roster. Could Wilmer Becerra as a backup outfielder? I mean, we talked about Neto before. Is there anybody else that was just added that you think could maybe bust in and make some kind of, I don't want to say impact, but could contribute in a way in 2017 for the Mets?
No, I think, like I had mentioned a little bit earlier, is that all of those, the five guys they added to the 40, they're all, that's all for long-term potential. I think probably the first guy you see out of that group is Rosario, because all the other guys were at A-ball this year, and Rosario was in Binghamton, and Rosario at some point, if he doesn't start, but at some point will definitely be in Vegas this year. So I think Rosario's probably the first guy you see out of that group.
AFL, Arizona Fall League, just ended, or regular season ended, and it's wrapping up here. Gavin Cecchini was in there. You know, I know everybody's been talking about Tebow and what have you, and some of the other players we mentioned, you know, have made some appearances. Could you give an idea for the listeners? How did Cecchini, you know, what was the feeling about him? He's, you know, now with Neil Walker coming back, I'm not sure there's a role here. Maybe he's trade bait. Obviously, Walker's only a one-year deal, so, you know, who knows? What are some of the other players that maybe stood out that, you know, are going to move up the pecking order, maybe be contributors? You know, what did you take away from the Arizona Fall League the last few weeks?
First of all, I'll touch on Cecchini, who he played every game but one at shortstop, so they didn't really go through with the fact that he was going to play second base much. He just had one game there. So it's still pretty tough to get a judge of what he's capable at second, which is probably ultimately where he plays a lot next year. But he did exactly what he does with the bat. He put the ball in play, hit well. So, but he had 6 errors in 12 games at shortstop. So I think part of that is he might be available via trade. So other teams still wanted to see him at shortstop because obviously if he can handle the position, that's where his offense would have more value. So, but another name to keep an eye on is right-handed reliever Corey Taylor. He was the closer for St. Lucie this year, had 20 saves, ERA under 2. But he actually had a little extra velocity in the AFL. A couple of the games I was tracking and a couple of people that I talked to were at the game, he was hitting 96 with his fastball, and he was around 87, 88 with his slider, and he had 17 strikeouts in 14 innings. So I think Corey Taylor, who was he was a seventh rounder 2 years ago, I think he's a name to keep an eye on that could come pretty quick. He'll start in Binghamton this year, so he's one to keep an eye on. And another one is David Roseboom. He was the Binghamton closer this year after they traded Akil Morris, and he was lights out, a lefty that he's not your typical lefty. He gets out lefties and righties pretty well because he throws 2 changeups and one's got a little screwball action on it. So he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on too. And I would have to talk about Champ Stewart too, because he wasn't protected from the Rule 5, although I think he would be an outside shot to get drafted, but he does have
pinch runner maybe? Runner type, if somebody wants to keep that kind of position on their roster?
Yeah, and then again, that comes back into the 26-man that we were talking about. If you have 26 players, can't you carry someone on the roster that's a pinch runner / defensive replacement, which Stewart could be? He's got 80 grade speed, and he's a great defensive center fielder. So he hit well. He hit 300 in the AFL, but the strikeouts were there again. He struck out 23 times and 70 at-bats. So that's the big knock on him. But he tied for the league with 12 steals, so he's the best speed option the Mets and the minor leagues have if he can put it together at the plate.
Michael Mayer, Mets Memorized Online. Now, let's go quickly. Baseball. I mean, all these prospect lists will come out. You'll have Baseball America. I'm sure MetsMemorizedOnline.com will do one. Everybody will do one. The Baseball Prospectus one just came out. Of course, Ben Rosario, number one. Robert Gazelman's on it. Thomas Izbukhi, the lefty from Brooklyn. You talked about him this past summer. Dominic Smith, Desmond Lindsay, the outfielder. Draft pick, right-handed pitcher, Justin Dunn. Shortstop, Andres Jimenez. Brendan Nimmo, Cecchini, and Wilmer Becerra on there. Any surprises? Anybody that you feel got slighted? This is always fun off-season talk. I mean, there's a million opinions. There's a million different lists. You know, sifting through them, some of them are statistically done. Some of them are done with the scouting component, which is probably the right way to do it. What were your thoughts about the first, it seems like, prospect list that came out?
I thought it was, it was the basic 10 names that you're looking at for the top 10. The order surprised me a little bit because a lot of people are going to have Dominic Smith number two when they had him number four behind Gazelman and Sisapuki. But, I mean, once you get into the 2 to 5 range, I mean, that's all in personal preference. And then they had Justin Dunn 6, which I think some people will actually have higher. But, I mean, it's pretty basic list. Cecchini being that low surprised me a little bit, but at some point you have to knock down his value if he can't stay at shortstop. So that's not that surprising. A couple of names that might be in some people's top 10 that weren't on there was Nitto, the catcher we've been talking about. I think it's reasonable for some people to have him in their top 10, as well as Peter Alonso, who was one of their draft picks this year that has serious power.
And they're very high on him from what some of the writers have been saying about Alonso. Very high on him.
Yes, he hit a ball out this year to right center field where he kind of just flipped his wrist and it went out. So, I mean, he's got raw power. It's probably already the best power in the Mets system, so that's why some people are getting excited about him. I think maybe the reason they had him lower on their list, they had him at 19, was he's got a little hole in the swing, and he's really just a first base only guy. So it's you have to know about the bat if there's no chance for another position. But I think Alonso and Nitto are the two guys that probably could be in the top 10, but they're right around there. So I don't think there was any huge surprises in their list.
You mentioned maybe in an article over at Metsparz Online, you know, one of the value players that may be out on the market, Trevor Plouffe from Minnesota, third baseman. You know, really what he does is what you would hope David Wright could probably do now. And I don't, you know, and Wright is such a wild card because the health is so, I mean, you really, from a health perspective, can't expect anything from Wright. But Plouffe is a guy that could hit lefties, has some power. You know, I don't know much about him defensively in the sense where I hadn't watched him day in and day out. You put him out there. And then, you know, it would be remiss if I didn't put out this Brett Cecil contract, because it does impact the Mets in the sense where, you know, the Cardinals throw out a 4-year, $30 million deal for a lefty. Maybe they have some thoughts of him potentially closing a little bit. I know he's 29. Jerry Blevins is in his early 30s, but it ties into a lot of what we talked about, because you talked about maybe getting Edgen off the roster. You have Smoker, who's young but just, you know, did not do well against lefties when he came up later in the year. A situational lefty is so important, in my opinion. You know, the Mets may really need to jump out and break the bank a little bit, but by no means do I think they should give a 4-year deal to Jerry Blevins. So, you know, when you talk about a Plouffe adding to the roster and some of the things we said, it's going to be tough, mainly because of David Wright, also because you don't know how this bullpen's going to shake out.
Yeah, I think they'll have a tough time bringing back Blevins, especially, the Mets had even made it known that it was going to be tough before the Cecil deal, and Cecil getting that many years for a bullpen arm and that much money, I think Blevins has no problem. He could even get a 3-year deal at this point. I don't see the Mets doing that for a left-handed reliever. So, I mean, that's tough to bring him back. And like you said, Smoker he isn't your typical loogie, because he actually does better against righties. So then if you do non-tender Edgen, or just look at how unproductive Edgen was last year, you're kind of looking for that left-handed reliever. And I know they have reportedly shown some interest in Boone Logan, so it'll be curious to see if that's kind of their fallback to Blevins. So,
and that's more of a Logan is more strictly lefty. At least, I mean, Blevins was that coming here, but he's been better than that since being here. So that's just something to throw out there. You're actually downgrading with Logan, Boone Logan, because he can't get righties out. Or he hasn't historically done that.
Yeah, so I think it's going to come down to cost when it comes to a left-handed reliever. And, I mean, you don't want to have to worry about that, but you can't just go out and give 3 years, $20 million, $18 million to a left-handed reliever. You saw how it worked out with Bastardo last year. They gave him 2 years, $12 million, and he had been good the prior couple of years, and it just didn't work out. It's a crapshoot when you get into that type of reliever and how much money and years that you're comfortable giving them.
Yep. And you also have the mileage. Look, when the Yankees, that's an extreme case. When the Yankees paid Pedro Feliciano for a couple of years, I think it was about $8 or $12 million. I think the third year might have been an option at that time. And he didn't pitch an inning for them. Michael, so as we wrap up, what do you have coming up? Obviously, the winter meetings will be here in just a couple of weeks. There may be Cespedes news sooner rather than later. Who knows? We'll keep an eye on that. What's next for you? AFL just ended. What do you got coming up to the listeners could know about?
Well, right now, me and the rest of the writers from Mets Minors are working, actually. We decided we're going to be crazy this year and do a top 100 Mets prospects. So we're actually compiling our list right now and should start unveiling that in the next couple of weeks. So that's something to look out for. I know it's kind of crazy to do 100, but it's more so to just kind of give the readers an idea of some of these lower-level guys, because sometimes they have breakout years, like Nito. Nito was way, way down in our preseason list last year, as he was on a bunch of people, and he had a breakout year, so now he's a top 20 prospect. So we kind of just want to give everyone a look at some of the guys they may not have heard of and just give them a little more info on guys that might surprise someone this year. So
good stuff as always, Michael. Appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving. I'm sure we'll catch up before the off season is comes to an end and we hit spring training. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome, thanks, Mike.
And that's Michael Mayer. You can check him out, Mets Minors, of course, and MetsMinorsOnline.com does a lot of great work over there. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, I'm going to wrap up programming notes. Blah, blah, blah. You know the deal. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMinorsOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on SoundCloud, iTunes, and whatever podcasting service you desire. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best, unbiased, and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMinorsOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMinorsOnline.com right now. That's Mets, MERIZED, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
We're back. Talking Mets podcast. Mike Silva here. Some programming notes. So here's the deal. Next week is obviously Thanksgiving, a long weekend. Everybody's probably, who knows? These days, the day before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve has always been that nice, long weekend for a lot of people. But everyone moves everything up. So maybe Tuesday is going to be the day. It's like Thursday is the new Friday in the summer, and Tuesday will be the new Thanksgiving Eve. As far as the show, let's put it this way. Depending on where things go this week, and obviously as I talked about in the opening, there's some smoke and about Cespedes and what have you. We'll see how the Sunday show goes. If not, then we'll probably push everything to the winter meetings, which would be, kind of a preview show the week before, and we'll do something fun there. So just want to keep you guys in the loop. If you come on next Sunday, hey, where's Mike? What's going on? We're going to try to play some of this, especially on the holiday weeks by year, because you just don't want to keep repeating the same stuff. The content can go stale on these shows. Something like we just did with Michael can be fresh, unlike the regular season where things go like that, can be fresh for a little bit. So just wanted to put that quick programming note. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on the Cespedes situation. We'll keep an eye on what's going on with the Mets and Sandy Alderson. But I have a feeling This week, as you get into the holiday, I'm not sure that anybody's going to commit to anything. I think you're going to see things transpire as you get closer to the winter meetings. Of course, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I want to thank Michael Mayer. Check him out at the Maine Mets on Twitter and at MetsMorrisonline.com. There's a lot of Mets minor stuff. Of course, you could check me out on Twitter at Mike Silva Media. And all the time, you can check this show out at MetsMorrisonline.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, or whatever podcasting service you desire. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
How to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.